Now, get ready to spend the next 2 hours with our three sports-loving ladies, Mia O'Brien, Lauren Brooks, and Taylor Dahl.
This is Helmets and Heels
on 1010XL, switched on by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor. Show me what you got, pretty
lady. Back in the studio today, once again, thanks to our friends at Coastal Equipment and Hidden Hills, and certainly Jack O'Brien, the commissioner of the Googan Open. It was absolutely fantastic yesterday, and we appreciate all of the clients and listeners for making the event so incredible, and we look forward already to next year's event. Well, speaking of yesterday, that's when we saw the video of Jaguars players reporting. Does it feel, you think, to them like the first day of school?
I'm sure there's that vibe of, okay, we finally get, and some of these guys don't stop. Like, the moment the season ends, they still continue working out, and they're all over the country working out with different people and trainers and friends that are also in the NFL. But at the same time, it's that for some of them, it's a fresh start. They're here in Jacksonville. New, the Jaguars that are returning are coming off a season where they collapsed at the end, so they're probably ready to get going too. When we talked to Foye, he talked about how heavy it was on him, and he's ready to get back at it. So I'm sure for them, there's this mix of excitement. I'm sure there's a little bit of nervousness of, not like, I'm nervous to play football, but like, here we go. We can't let last year happen again.
Yeah, I was always incredibly nervous for my first day of school. The second day was always fine, but the first day, I was always terrified.
I mean, maybe for like the first day of middle or high school, but other than that, maybe because I'm a nerd and I liked school.
I liked school too, but my problem
also
was...
I mean, you played, well, so here's the thing, Lauren. Soccer is a winter sport in Florida. So with me, because soccer was a fall sport up north, I had already, like, been in the school for, like, 3.5-4 weeks for preseason. All of you former and current football players can attest to that, too. Like, when you've been there since August 1, you're like, okay, like, let's get to the school part of this, especially if you're not a morning person like me, and you're like, I'm over the 7 a.m. workouts. I would rather go to school for 8:30 and practice after school. So so there was a feeling of, like, okay, we've at least gotten through that part of the season where now we can – go to school and then practice or have games afterwards.
I just hated the syllabus. Like, every single class would go over the syllabus.
But I mean, come on, get to college, and syllabus week is the best week of the year, baby.
I get that that's how it's supposed to be, but for some reason that always just, I was always just so nervous that, like, I wasn't going to be able to grasp the subjects, which is a little crazy because if you look at my GPAs throughout high school and college, I never got a C and everything, but I was always, like I said, every year, no matter what the grade, I was always so scared on the first day of school. But in watching the video on Jaguars.com with the Hunt extras, and they do such a great job, they'll obviously be putting out the full season once we get closer. But Eric Armstead to me was the one who kind of jumped out as he's looking around going, okay, this is my new home. How do I like the Miller Electric Center? I don't know. I'm going to have to evaluate. He looked like he was a little bit, whether it's unsure or just trying to get it to know everyone.
That's a good description of it, syllabus week, because that, from what I've been told, like, that's kind of what this week is. You know, they obviously, they meet as a team for the first time. Those, again, who participate in this voluntary portion of the spring off-season program. But other than that, it's, you know, you weigh in, you get your measurements, you meet with your position coach, but it is very much a syllabus week right now. And I think that's important to note, because on the heels of the Josh Allen press conference last week for his contract extension, and he's referring to, I'll be here for a couple of weeks of OTAs, to which media members or fans may say, oh, that means that he will actually be at practice when practices do become open to the media in May. Not necessarily. For players, they view the offseason program, OTAs, as one big thing. And so he may be there these first few weeks, in which it's more of the classroom setting, more of the let's get the lay of the land, let's, you know, do all the housekeeping stuff, as opposed to when they actually hit the field in May. And hey, he may be here, but we do know that he stressed that he will be going back to Arizona.
I think it's important that he's here, Taylor, in the beginning, because Ryan Nielsen is the new defensive coordinator, and he needs to establish how he likes things done, and there needs to be a lot of communication with a new system that wasn't there before installed. And so I think it's important that he's there at the beginning. And like Mia said, if he's not there at the actual workouts when we get to go view the practices, okay, that we learned a year ago, do whatever you want, Josh. And as long as you come in great shape, which we know he will, working hard and ready to attack quarterbacks.
Yeah, I think Josh clearly feels like whatever he did last season worked well for him, and it panned out once he got to the season. So why change a routine that you felt like almost flipped your career in a positive way? And so, yeah, I heard Tony and Mike Dempsey talking about this too, and they felt that he'll be here for this just beginning, and then he'll probably go off and do his stuff in Arizona and do his off-season routine that he did last year. Like I said, that worked. And so for him, good for you. I know last year there were some there was a lot of criticism around it, but I think it was also more so it was like, okay, like you want a contract, but you don't want to be here to figure out your contract. He's got his contract now. We saw he has earned his way to his contract this last season. And so do what you need to do to come back and get another 17 and a half sacks.
All right. So Doug Peterson met with the Jaguars yesterday. Here are his comments and his message to the team on day one.
Hey, good afternoon. I've had a lot of time from our last game. Now, a lot of time to think about the direction in which we're going. I think that's the most important thing. Is that we got to get better every single day. We can't be satisfied with just being satisfied. We can't be satisfied with just being average. We can't be satisfied with just being ordinary. No. No. We got winners in this room. We've got Super Bowl champions in this room. We've got guys that have been there and done that in this room. That's the culture we've started. And that's the culture that we're going to continue to have. Every day. Every day we attack the classroom. Every day we attack the practice field. Okay? Every day is an opportunity to get better. Coaches and players. Every single day. Okay? All right?
Like I said, thanks to Jaguars.com, the Hunt Extras that is available for your viewership right now on their website. And obviously there's music underneath because this is a production, but we wanted you to hear Doug's comments in case you hadn't seen that video yet. And I think, Mia, the message is clear to Taylor's point earlier about the collapse last season. Doug Peterson wants them to understand that the back half of last season cannot happen ever again.
Right. And I think he also stressed something that he talked about at the combine. He talked about at the owners' meetings, which is they were very intentional with who they brought in free agency. Mm-hmm. For all those who criticized, hey, at this juncture of the development of the Jaguars under Doug Peterson, should you really be bringing in this many free agents versus having developed and drafted your own and have that conveyor belt? I feel like Doug and Trent Baalke in the front office felt like they had to go out and get guys in free agency, not because, you know, and yes, there is truth to this, that they needed to fill some holes, and they needed to fill those holes now because they want to win now, but also because they recognize that certainly drafting and developing players is critical to succeeding in this league, but so is having guys who have been there before. And unfortunately, and it goes back to, once again, how many Jaguars remain on the roster from pre-2021, it is less than nine, less than nine players. I believe we're at six players. You go to any other team in the National Football League, and there's a good bet that they have somewhere between three to six players left from their 2020 draft class alone, as opposed to the Jaguars, who have one. Actually, two. Daniel Thomas. Shout out to DT. Two from the 2020 draft class. And I think that that's a big part of this, is that in an optimal world, you would have players from your 2019 draft class, your 2020 draft class, 2021, multiple players who had postseason experience before. So you didn't have to go out and address getting a Mitch Morse, who's been to the AFC Championship game. Gabe Davis been to the AFC Championship game. Ronald Darby won a Super Bowl. Eric Armstead played in two Super Bowls. You wouldn't have to do that. But unfortunately, because of what was inherited, you did have to go out and address that, because when the going got tough last year, you didn't have those experienced guys to steer the ship.
It's funny because I was trying to figure out, other than Ronald Darby, is there anyone else in
I thought
that
the same
is
thing.
A Super Bowl champion?
I was like trying to do that in my head. I'm like,
that's exactly what I was thinking when I watched it.
Well, when you look at, not Super Bowl champ, but obviously Gabe Davis and Mitch Morse both have been on playoff teams. And so they've gone at least deep, and they've had experience of throughout the years with that. But yeah, when you're, I guess that's the one solo. But you still have guys with that experience. And I think there's also a realization for Doug and the Jaguars in general that this division is only getting better. And they realized that quickly last year. It kind of slapped them in the face of like, oh, we thought we had a couple years to ease it out and kind of figure things out, and they didn't. So now they're watching kind of this blueprint that all of the other AFC South teams are doing, and they're like, okay, well, we're going to have to bring in this combination of young guys that we can build, develop, and hopefully in a few years be able to give a reward as in a contract, but then also you do need those experience. You need the guys that know how to handle it once you get to that 8-3, don't settle, don't get comfortable, move on. You've got to win every game. And we heard Doug say it a lot of, you know, no game is more important than any other game, but there's certain scenarios where late in the, what felt like late last season, that you wanted it to almost, like, you wish they were playing like it meant more because it just didn't feel that way. So I think there's just this whole realization of you can't be stagnant. You've got to keep moving forward or things are going to collapse.
8-3, not good enough. Yeah. 8-4, not good enough. 8-5, oh, we've got time. It's okay. No, not good enough.
Yeah.
And my thing is you can contribute a lot of that or attribute a lot of that last season to the fact that Trevor Lawrence was injured and he wasn't able to practice, right? Like, we all know that he wasn't himself and therefore he wasn't able to go execute practices like he had been the previous seasons. But that doesn't explain a collapse on the defensive front.
Yeah.
That, to me, when we talk about the biggest storylines to watch moving forward from this offseason into next season, to me, it's the changes that have happened. The change at defensive coordinator is massive because your defense didn't suffer from those incredible injuries like the offense did, the drastic injuries. Tyson Campbell, yes, was injured. Who else that was a starter at the beginning of the season?
I mean, Devon Hamilton wasn't fully healthy.
Right, but by the end of the season, at least the back half of the season, he was better, certainly on the field, than he wasn't. But yeah, you're right, that's another one. With an illness, not really injury, but yeah. And so that's where it's like your defense was should have been there to be able to lift up your offense. And I realize we had a false sense of the defense because of all the takeaways in the first half.
I almost feel like they were gassed late because they did have to help the offense so much early. And there were several games that the Jags wouldn't have won if it wasn't for the defense early in the year. And that's what we talk about Trevor and how he got hurt late. It's not like the offense was playing outstanding in the beginning of the year. They got a whole lot of help defensively. And then the second half, the defense couldn't give them that. And in addition to everything piling up, it just fell apart. So I think that when we look at it, you just want to feel like you have a team. When you watch the Chiefs, when you watch even the Bills last year, and we'll see how that kind of goes on this year with all of the pieces that they've gotten rid of. But you would watch a complete game and be like, these guys can play four quarters of football and look like the same team. The Jags did not feel like that at one point last year. Every quarter, I felt like I was watching a different football team.
I would counter that with the Chiefs and we saw scoring was down across the board in the National Football League last year. So I think that's important to note. I go to the Chiefs win over the Dolphins in Germany. They were down 14-0 at half.
Mm-hmm.
And then they came back to win 21-14, which is easy to say when you have Patrick Mahomes, when you have Travis Kelce. But their defense kept them in that game because their defense knew who they were. And we've talked so much this offseason, whether it's on Helmets and Heels, Primetime, Frangie Show, go down the list of 1010XL programs. We've talked so much about identity. If you had told me in 2020 when the Chiefs won their first Super Bowl with Patrick Mahomes at the helm, if you had told me that the Chiefs' defense would have more of an identity come 2023, 2024, when they won their third Super Bowl in 5 years, I probably wouldn't have believed you because that team was so built around the offense, the explosive play of Tyreek Hill, of the wizard that is Patrick Mahomes, his ability to escape the pocket. And that was before they even invested in the run game with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, first-round pick, Isaiah Pacheco able to pop as a seventh-round pick. That was pre that too. But I think it was so focused on the offense. What they were able to build over the last 4 years, I think, is so critical and should be a blueprint. As much as we talk about the Chiefs and the Bills as a blueprint for the offense, that you need to be bringing in young guys, onboarding them, bringing them along so they can slot in down the road for those free agent fixes that you brought in to elevate the play of your young quarterback, I think we also need to be looking at those defenses and how they developed an identity. Because when the going gets tough, if you can have your defense keep you in the ball game, then that's going to give Trevor Lawrence enough room. That's going to give the offense enough leeway to say, we need to take some chances because it's a 14-all game in the fourth quarter against the Texans, and we need to go downfield, but we also need to know that the defense has our back if a deep shot isn't going to come through.
Yeah. And I agree. I mean, I think that defenses, you definitely still have to have one that's going to come in and help. And I think what happened with Kansas City is Kansas City realized that Patrick Mahomes can do whatever he wants, pretty much. I mean, you have a quarterback that's completing high 60s, 75% of his passes in every single game. And yes, he has Travis Kelce, but beyond that, there was a whole lot of question marks last year. So what they realized is, hey, let's, in the beginning, Patrick Mahomes got to sit and learn the NFL a little bit. Then he came in and they gave him the weapons that he needed, and then they figured out that he doesn't need and he can elevate all of his players. So their blueprint looks a little bit different. Obviously, Trevor Lawrence has not played like Patrick Mahomes, so you do have to give him the things he needs. He needs that protection. He needs people to throw to right now. Once you get to the level where that comfortability raises, then I feel like you can start being like, okay, now we know that he'll be able to turn whatever weapons he needs to into ones that can work in the NFL, and then we have these defenses that help. But I think it is a good balance, and that's why we always talk about how important both lines are, offensive line and defensive line.
And a fact check, thank you to one of our Heligans. I think we've decided on Heligans, at least
for
now.
Yeah, for sure.
One of our Heligans on the heels of the Googan, in Alabama, thank you for the fact check. The Chiefs were up 21-0, but they held on 21-14, which only emphasizes my point even more. The going got tough. Mm-hmm. Your offense got stuck in the mud in the second half across the pond in Germany, and your defense held firm. This defense couldn't stop a nosebleed in the month of December.
Mm-hmm.
And so we saw it against the Bengals, which was the omen of all omens, in which the Jags were moving up and down the field pretty much at will in the first three quarters of that Monday Night Football game. But when the defense was then allowing the Bengals to do the same, that's where you found yourselves in trouble, and that's where this idea of going blow for blow, like, yes, you have the offense to do that until Trevor Lawrence gets hurt, until Christian Kirk gets hurt. Zay Jones was on one leg the whole season. I know we want to segue to some basketball talk, and what better way to do so, Lauren and Taylor, than with a quick that?
That just happened. Brought to you by Florida Home AC, the official air conditioning partner of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
We are going to lean on RJ a little bit later in the 12 o'clock hour to break down the NBA playoffs and the play-in tournament, which kicks off tonight. But first, this was a guy who got me truly into the modern NBA, and he has now announced his retirement. Six-time All-Star Blake Griffin announced on Instagram about 10 minutes ago, the former number one overall pick in 2009, 2011 Rookie of the Year Award, has announced he has played his final season with the Boston Celtics. Blake Griffin, what a career. Blake of the Year.
Blake.
I said it, but yes.
I did
get a chance when I was living in LA back in 2014 when he and CP3 and like the whole crew, when the Clippers were clicking, and unfortunately Kobe was recovering from the Achilles tear. And so like Clippers tickets were like, that was the thing people wanted to go see was the Clippers. I went to three different games. They were so fun. So just wanted to shout out Blake Griffin.
You've had a lot of retirement in the last 2 days.
Yeah, I feel old.
Yeah, with the Yankees broadcaster John Sterling as well. But one quick thing back to the Chiefs. I think the massive difference between the Jaguars and the Chiefs, and certainly Mahomes v. Lawrence is a big conversation, but to me the bigger part is the Chiefs draft really well.
Yeah.
So when a guy like Tyreek Hill leaves, they can move along, and they don't have to still go spend that giant money in free agency to bring receivers in or bring defensive pieces in because they've drafted really well.
Mm-hmm.
And if you look at their 2019 Super Bowl winning roster and you compare it to now, yeah, there's a lot of changes. There's only a few guys like Kelce, Mahomes, Nnadi, mm-hmm. and Chris Jones that are still there, but it's because they've drafted the pieces, whether it's those corners or the other receivers, running backs, they've drafted really well. And that, to me, is the stark contrast between what's happening in Kansas City and what's happening in Jacksonville. And then, yes, the quarterback and him elevating everyone around him, that is the next step. But if you don't draft well and you rely on free agency solely, it's really hard to win Super Bowls. We saw the Rams do it once.
Yeah.
But that was, I feel like, once in a blue moon. All right. So, yes, we will get it to some basketball. Caitlin Clark last night, no surprise, drafted number one overall in the WNBA by the Indiana Fever. Mia, when the conversation turns to Caitlin Clark, I saw Scott Carter, who covers Florida football, tweet this out. My daughter asked me if Caitlin Clark is the most famous athlete in all of women's sports. And I said, no, but she's one of them. And obviously when you're, I don't know how old his daughter is, he didn't say, but I'm going to guess she's under the age of 12, 15, somewhere in there. So Serena Williams, she may not have lived through, or probably didn't live through, right?
Right.
And all the other ones, Mia Hamm and FloJo and all those are the other ones he mentioned. But I think, yes, if you are a certain age and under, Caitlin Clark is by far the most famous, certainly women's basketball player.
You could make the argument, take college football out of it. She's undoubtedly the most famous college athlete, or now former college athlete, but over the last 2 years, you could easily make that argument. I already got an email from BetOnline AG saying that a lot of money came in on the desert overnight for her to be the MVP in her first year of the WNBA. I think that's a little excessive.
That's a bit of a stretch.
That's a little excessive. Rookie of the year, maybe we start there.
Yeah, I think I'll give you Caleb Williams because of the fact that he won a Heisman.
Right.
He
came why I said take football out of it.
Oh, yeah, true.
Yeah, take football out of it. She's the most famous. She was the most famous college athlete in America the last year and a half. I don't think there is an argument for anyone else. And you can come at me with the Angel Reese's and the Paige Becker. Sure, all great players. But unfortunately, if you went up to some rando on the street who hasn't watched a lick of women's college basketball and maybe just, you know, listens to pop culture, the name Caitlin Clark is now in pop culture. Like, it's that simple. And so that's where, and we really didn't get a chance to really dive into it. I guess we did, but not really the other week. Like, that's where, for me, the Diana Taurasi pushback is just so fascinating to me. Mm-hmm. Like, first of all, Diana, you're going to have to play on the Olympic team with her this summer. So have fun with that. You're making all these comments and now you're going to have to play with her. And I get it's, you know, tough love and whatever. But
will Caitlin start, you think?
No.
Or will Diana? Yeah.
Diana will start. And and Caitlin knows that. And I thought Caitlin's comments even last night about going to the Indiana Fever, who, mind you, sold out Gainbridge Fieldhouse for the draft pep rally. Again, women's basketball. Sold out an NBA arena for a draft party in which Caitlin's not even there and the current players are running around in Caitlin Clark jerseys. That's all you need to know as far as that goes. But for women who have fought for so long to try to get notoriety to the league, you literally just got the golden ticket. The golden ticket has been given to you. She is going to draw eyeballs. Last night, if you looked on StubHub, if you looked on Ticketmaster, for her first six games, you can't get into the building for less than $200.
Yeah, I saw tickets going for like $500 and $600.
That is absurd.
Yeah.
Like, for one...
Just wait until the seventh game.
Right.
Yeah.
It'll be $30.
Right. And again, and maybe she has rookie growing pains and maybe that drops it. Or maybe she's dropping 30 a game. I don't know. But that's where, like, it's so fascinating, this pushback, because you literally were given a golden... Like, this is the golden ticket. Mm-hmm. And I understand maybe it's not you and you feel like you fought for this. You should be the one that should, you know, be considered the most famous women's athlete, famous women's basketball player. But at the same time, like, that's why I appreciate Sue Bird's comments. And maybe it's because Sue's retired. Sue's not going to be playing against
Caitlin. Yeah, the competition.
Right. But it is so, is it not fascinating? And I know Ryan Russillo tweeted it. He's like, the biggest difference between the NBA and the WNBA, and I'm sure there's plenty of LeBron truthers out there that would disagree with this when he first came into the league, is that he said he's never seen a young, heralded player come into the league and receive more pushback from the veterans in the NBA.
It is odd. It's a weird thing, especially with the way that you have been complaining about how WNBA doesn't get recognition and doesn't get all of these things. And then, like you said, you have the opportunity to build off of this and you're shooting it down.
Have y'all ever been around a catty woman?
Right. That's what Russillo said. Right. It's jealousy, but it's just.
Yeah.
I've been around plenty. I understand.
Right.
I mean, I don't know that I would have ever gone public with some of the things that they've said. I would be like, we're excited to welcome her. And I can't wait to see how she does in this league. That's how I would have said it. And then secretly, I would have been like, I'm not letting her shoot a single three for the first half, right? Like, that would have been my, I'm more of a defensive player. That would have been my mindset. I would never have been.
Right. I'm going to take, I'm going to let my play do the talking
on
the court.
That's how I would have approached
it. And I'll, you know, be physical with her, make it uncomfortable. Like, not, especially when you're supposed to be one of the spokespeople, you know? And certainly some of those current WNBA players were at the WNBA draft last night. One who was there was Aaliyah Boston, who will be Caitlin's teammate, who, round of applause for Aaliyah, RJ. Like, she is just such an ascending star in media, on the court, just seems like such a good teammate. And credit to Caitlin, because clearly Caitlin was prepared for this. And I think you saw this with Victor Wembanyama, RJ, you know, remind me of this. I feel like you saw this with his NBA draft, too, where everyone knows that they are the ticket. Caitlin, Wemby, like, they are the ticket. However, they deflected all of the praise to the team around them. And obviously, you know, Caitlin's entering a little bit different of a situation than Wemby did with the Spurs, who, you know, obviously only won a handful of games coming out of the gate in his first season, or at the very least in the first half of the season. And the expectation is the Indiana Fever will be better now with back-to-back number one overall picks. But
like the Jags.
I was just going to say, Lauren, I think that that's a conversation worth having.
Yeah.
When you have the number one back-to-back overall picks, and we're going to study them for science, like somebody from PFF said last week, I think you could look at this organization as well, because Caitlin would be the Trevor Lawrence, Trayvon, the Aaliyah, however you want to put it. Anyways, point is that she consistently said, like, my job will be easy because I have Aaliyah, because I have Erica Wheeler. Like, I just dish the ball inside to them, and, like, I can focus on that. It doesn't have to be about me shooting the three. She didn't mention the word three-point shot once because I was paying attention all last night during the coverage from 7 p.m. to 9:45 p.m. She didn't mention the three-point shooting once. It was all about, I'm going to have the opportunity because of Aaliyah. It's going to make my life easy, my transition easy. And so credit to her because she hit all the right notes. Just like I said, I think Wemby did too, with deferring all of his praise to Greg Popovich when he was drafted. And, you know, it's just fascinating to see that, like, she's playing all the right notes. And yet there was the pushback. So
there will always be pushback. I can guarantee you that when there's somebody who people think they got something that I didn't get. And that's how I think they feel. All right, let's head out to Austin, Texas. We'll check in with Tyler Feldman and talk about the Longhorns draft prospects when we return right here on Helmets and Heels on 10 to XL on 2.5 FM.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
This is Helmets and Heels.
Kept classy by First Coast Lighting and Fans. Upscale lighting, fans, and home decor.
On 1010 XL.
Okay, Motion City soundtrack.
Now, this is Taking Back Sunday.
Taking Back Sunday. I was going back into my like mid-2000s
same,
like, archive.
Same like era.
It's same era, and I was like, okay, it's one or the other. Tyler Feldman joining us now on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline. Tyler Feldman, did you know that this was Taking Back Sunday?
Yeah, I'm the wrong guy to ask. I was not prepared for Taking Back Sunday. But it sounds like a total jam, lady.
Yeah.
It totally does.
I mean, you're a man of many talents, so I didn't know if music was a was
look, included. I'm not going to lie about my knowledge of whatever song that was. It was a great song. It was a great lead-in.
There we go. What better way to kick off our little mini-series we're doing this week on Helmets and Heels, in which we further examine the prospects that could be there for the Jaguars at number 17 overall with the reporters who know them best. Tyler joining us again from Austin, Texas, where he is one of the weekend sports anchors at KVUE in ATX. Tyler, with A.D. Mitchell in particular, let's start with him because that's when I reached out to you about players that may be there at 17. We'll get to Byron Murphy and, of course, the latest with Tavondre Sweat as well. But A.D. Mitchell is a name that I think has kind of entered the fray late when it comes to Jaguar fans' wish lists. Brian Thomas Jr. of LSU has been the name that has been linked most to the Jaguars at 17 if they were to stay put, I think just by virtue of where he could fall following the big three at the wide receiver position going in some order in the top 10. But when you look at AD's game from when he was at Georgia to where he finished at Texas, and then you look at some of these other wide receivers, what stands out most about him that could catapult him into the mid the first round?
Yeah, I love Adonai Mitchell's game. He actually prefers to go by Adonai as opposed to AD. That's something that I learned this past year. So if he goes to Jacksonville, you'll have a leg up on how he prefers his first name fully to be called. My one word for him is maybe two words, however you figure out the hyphen. He's just a playmaker. The reason Sark brought him in from Alabama, and he told us this, was he wanted a guy who could win the 50-50 balls. And throughout the course of this past season, he had 11 touchdowns, which was the highest mark on the team from a receiving perspective. But the guy just always seemed to find a way to catch the football, which you can kind of teach, but there's also a feel to it too, right? And I actually talked to some media buddies up in Buffalo inquiring about Adonai Mitchell, and he's got above average speed, so he could be a deep ball threat. He's got the, you know, quickness, so he could be a slant guy, too, over the middle. I guess my one concern for Adonai Mitchell is he does have a tendency, or he did have a tendency this past season, to be hot and cold. Like, when the ball's going his way, great, but if it's not, like, where is he? And maybe that's just a part of the offense of Texas. Maybe that's just the position, the wide receiver position. But I think if he finds a way to be more consistently impactful on the offensive side of the ball, he is a surefire. I think he's a guy who maybe he is that fourth best wide receiver on draft board, but I actually think he could have a better NFL career than some of those guys listed ahead of him right now.
Taylor, how did Adonai get from Athens to Austin? How did Steve Sarkisian get him away from Kirby Smart in a national championship winning program?
So Adonai Mitchell has a young child. He's a Texas guy. And so I think in the back of his head, he wanted to, hey, let's come home. Let's figure out a way to get closer to family. And I think Texas was just the perfect fit. Steve Sarkisian started to find his stride, and it just started to really work out. And it really was a perfect marriage. I think the reason we're talking about Adonai Mitchell right now is because he made that decision to transfer from Georgia to Texas, and he had the season he did for the Longhorns.
Yeah, I mean, I think that transfer is probably one of the best things he could have done for his career, especially moving forward. What did you see with Mitchell and his abilities that kind of just took that next step in Texas? Because you really saw him find his place there this last season.
It was the confidence for me. I feel like Quinn Ewers, as he's been going through the roller coaster of being a highly touted quarterback and then maybe not performing the way that people expected off the bat, being patient with them. Adonai came in with this national championship experience, with this top-tier program experience, and knowing how a program that wins football games and wins national titles gets it done. He brought that energy to Texas, part of Steve Sarkisian finding his stride and getting back to where he wants to be as a head coach. And it just worked out offensively. Sark's a big offensive mind. You have an experienced receiver like Adonai Mitchell. You pair him with a guy like Xavier Worthy. You give Quinn Ewers options. And Adonai Mitchell made the most of his ability. He's just a guy who I think puts out confidence for everyone else around him. At least for me watching, it's just like, this is a guy who's confident, knows what he's capable of, and catches the football. You know, at the end of the day, at the wide receiver position, you can have blazing fast speed. You can block really well. You can have breakaway downfield speed. But if you can't catch the football, then what's the point?
Yeah, that's
I think with that and I Mitchell, it's like the guy can catch the football and knows how to win those 50-50 balls.
That is pretty important. Let's get the football in your hands.
Our YouTube chat line is lighting up right now, Tyler Feldman, as he joins us on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline from Austin, Texas. Quick to note from Robert that A.D. Mitchell mossed Christian Gonzalez when he played for Georgia. He whooped Ontarian Arnold. But let's take this Adonai Mitchell talk and transfer it to the other wide receiver who is considered a first, second-round fringe prospect in Xavier Worthy. In terms of reliability at the catch point, which we were just talking about with Adonai Mitchell, but also that speed that obviously blew everyone away at the combine, the all-time record, what do you make of both of those players comparatively, their NFL futures?
Well, I mean, you have to look at their size and stature first, right? AD's listed at 6'2", 205 pounds. X is listed at 5'11", 165 pounds. Like, if you three ladies walked up to Xavier Worthy, I think you'd be shocked at how this guy ran a 4.21. He'll tell you he knew he was going to run a 4.21. He knew he was going to run that fast. I think that's the big question mark for me with Xavier Worthy. Beyond talented, his speed will make any NFL offense more dangerous. But you have to put into the equation that guy, that size, playing at the NFL level. He's got to get bigger, but he's got to maintain his speed, but he's got to get bigger and stronger to, I think, absorb some of the bigger hits that he'll experience at the NFL level. My big thing with Xavier Worthy is he had some ankle issues. He had like a under the radar, no one really knew about this like broken hand type issue toward the end of last season. Can he stay healthy? I think he has all the weapons. He returned punts for Texas. So he's definitely an X factor, a playmaker, super fast, talented, but can he stay healthy at that size is my big question mark with Xavier Worthy. He's got everything else there. He can catch the football just fine. He's got blazing speed, obviously, as all football fans saw during the NFL combine.
Let's get to the defensive tackles. We'll start with Brian Murphy the second. We know that he doesn't have ideal length, so to speak, but he's got some quick twitch muscles, right?
Yeah, my one word for him is disruptor. I love talking with Byron Murphy. He's just a nice guy. Like, he's a little bit quiet, actually, but he's just, you know, Big 12 defensive line of the year. Like you said, not the biggest, but he is super strong. And when you have that strength with that size at that interior position, it's actually the perfect combo that allows him to be why he's graded so highly right now going into the NFL draft, because he's so athletic. Like, typically you've got bigger guys at that position. They can't move as smoothly, or they can't squeeze into places to either rush the passer or stop the run. But he's got the size, enough size, with the strength to be super athletic, more athletic than most. And then that strength and speed lends to so much success all three downs, both with the pass rush and rushing the passer. I actually, we spoke with ESPN draft analyst Matt Miller back in late February. We asked him about Murphy, and Miller told us, quote, his quickness and his raw strength are just jaw-droppingly good. And Sark always told us that Murphy's kind of built like a pit bull. So he had a play against Wyoming this past season, early on in the non-conference, a big boy touchdown. And I think that kind of just set the stage for the season that he ended up having. And I think maybe the coolest story with him is, day before the Big 12 championship, his uncle passed away, and he was pretty emotional. These are human beings, right? We talk about them. Well, he's got all this size, this strength, but he was open enough after winning the Big 12 championship over Oklahoma State to say that last night my uncle passed, and I played this game and won this game for him. So just a good little human interest to Byron Murphy that I think elevates him as, you know, more than just a football player.
I love that, and I love the big boy touchdowns, Tyler. When you look, let's look for a second back, because when you look at his freshman and sophomore year, he played in almost every game, but wasn't starting there. And then you see him leap to this year being the Big 12 Defensive Lineman of the Year. What happened between those three seasons in Texas in general, but also for him, to where he really kind of solidified that spot on the line for himself?
Yeah, that's a great question. You have to understand, 2 years ago, 2022, Texas shockingly had zero players drafted. I'd have to look up how often or how many times that has happened, but what Steve Sarkisian has been able to do with the program in his three going on 4 years on the 40 acres has been pretty impressive. I don't know if everyone thought that he'd be able to create this type of program after everything that he had been through, both on and off the field. But I think you have to remember, with a school like Texas, in a state like Texas, where I'll tell you right now, I've covered enough high school football from upstate New York to North Carolina to now Austin, Texas. High school football is different here in this state. And when you're recruiting a number of high level prospects to stay in the state to play college football, it's understandable that Byron Murphy, as an underclassman, wasn't seeing as much playing time. Well, because the guys in front of him were bigger and better. I mean, that's just the reality. So we live in this era where, hey, if I'm not playing and I'm this year and I have this many years of eligibility left, I need to go to the transfer portal. I need to go where I'm playing. Well, Byron didn't do that. And I think it worked out just fine for him. And it showed that, hey, I can fight for my position, make the most of the opportunity when it's there, and then take advantage of it.
As if right on cue, Daniel Jeremiah of the NFL Network tweeted out about an hour ago, Tyler, two stocks I'd like to buy a little over a week away from the draft: Graham Barton of Duke, Byron Murphy of the University of Texas. I think the former may behoove your hometown Pittsburgh Steelers, but perhaps Byron Murphy could be the pick here in Jacksonville. Hey, Tyler, before we
Steelers need a lot of help. They need a lot of help.
We know they need a center. Perhaps it's Graham Barton. Before we let you go, brother man, I don't want to end on a sour note, but obviously the news of Tavondre Sweat being charged with a DWI last week kind of shocked a lot of people 3 weeks out from the NFL draft. What is the latest on that situation in Austin?
Yeah, I was at the gym on a Sunday. I had an off day, and me, you know this, but like, I saw this, I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I'm trying to like just have one day here. But reached out to our investigative reporter, and he got me in touch with all the right people. But I don't think this will have a huge impact on, I don't think anything's going to happen, or like going through the affidavit and all this stuff. Like, it seems like it's just going to pass. They have a date set, but for this kind of DWI situation, I think there's going to be a lot of pieces at place and people making sure Tavondre is on the right path. Obviously, a critical mistake, a critical error. There was actually another player still on the Texas football team involved in this. He's now off the team. Sark wasn't messing around there. Obviously, the severity of this is big in the scheme of, hey, let's not do this while we're driving, right? But I think Tavondre will tell you, he's such a fun guy. Like, he's a guy that if he's on your team, you're going to root for him. He just has that kind of personality. A lot of guys call him the funniest, and he was so open about, like, making sure he's not seen as, like, the partier. And I thought he had done such a great job of that throughout the course of the season. I don't know the intricate details of where he was coming from, and why, but I do think that it could maybe impact price point of how much he ends up getting paid. I don't see this impacting where he gets drafted, because he was the Outland Trophy winner, Big 12 Defensive Player of the Year. Him and Byron worked great together, because when Byron was getting a lot of attention, that left Tavondre Sweat open to do his thing, and vice versa. The two were just kind of a great tag team on that interior defensive line for Texas. I think Tavondre makes any team significantly better. My one word for him is he's just a congester. He's just a big boy, 6'5 plus, 360 plus. I mean, that guy is ginormous, but he's a fun ball of energy. I think it's a big mistake, but one he'll learn from quickly. With regard to what happened last week.
My one word for you, as your X profile suggests, is superstar, my friend. You can you can find him at Tyler Feldman TV, again, sports anchor, host, play-by-play at KVUE in Austin, covering all things Longhorns and beyond. We appreciate you hopping on the All-Pro Roofing Hotline, Tyler.
Hey, ladies, thank you so much. Until next time.
Thank you.
There he goes. Again, Tyler Feldman TV on X. Proud Pittsburgher, but now covering all things sports in the Austin, Texas area. Interesting comments, especially regarding the A.D. Mitchell, Xavier Worthy breakdown that I know we want to dive into a little bit on the other side of this timeout. We're also going to get back to the National Basketball Association. The play-in tournament begins tonight. In case you missed it, folks, the Orlando Magic are good again. Need I say more? This is Helmets and Heels.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Ready? In 3, 2... One.
The countdown to the draft is on.
I hope you're ready.
Who'll be off the board when the Jaguars pick? Let's find out.
1 o'clock hour is here, and let's not bury the lead, ladies. Not only do we have our next guest making his maiden voyage on the 1010XL airwaves, we also have a bit of a Cortica flair. If you don't know what Cortica is, you will shortly. It's the biggest little game in the nation. Ithaca College, Cortland, one of the longest standing D3 rivalries in college sports. But we get past that as we welcome on Will Parkinson of the Turn on the Jets podcast, one of the biggest newsbreakers up in the New York metropolitan area covering the Jets. Will, my friend, how are you, sir?
I'm good. I'm glad we got the Cortland Ithaca stuff out of the way. We are the defending national champions in Division III, and have a coach ranked in the top 30 by ESPN.com of best coaches in college football. So I'm riding high.
And as you know, Dan McNeil is one of my favorite characters in college football's history. So listen, I give respect where respect is due. President Bitterbaum is a good friend of mine.
That's a great way to describe him.
Yes.
Four and a half years of me playing for him was exactly the way I would describe it as well.
Will did indeed play for Cortland, and now he does cover the Jets, and he helps us as we count down to that all-important 17th pick that your Jacksonville Jaguars currently own. With the 10th overall pick, the New York Jets, Will, you can give me a player, you could give me a position. The New York Jets next week will select in the 2024 NFL Draft.
It's a great question. So I'm gonna give you kind of a political cop-out answer, but I'm also going to give you two. I'm going to give you three names that I think are the most likely, and I think it kind of all depends on how the board shakes out. I think anything after pick 4, I think the Jets will be a candidate to move up. I think they're in a somewhat similar position to the Jaguars in the sense of they could always use more alignment, right? You could always use things around the board, but the Jets could need a pass catcher. I think the roster is good enough as is to be a playoff team. I think the thinking is, hey, if Mike Williams is who he was, has been, and stays healthy, you know, with Aaron Rodgers and Garrett Wilson and Breece Hall, they'll be fine. Tyler Conklin as well, right? They'll be more than fine. This is also the worst offense, or one of the worst offenses in NFL history a year ago. And I think if Roma Dunze, Malik Nabers, or Marvin Harrison start to fall at all, again, Is it unlikely? Probably. I don't see, you know, Odunze getting past probably nine. But if one of those three guys is on the board for the Jets, you know, pick eight with Atlanta, who's going to probably draft a defensive player no matter what. So, you know, maybe get some draft capital there, whether it's Tennessee, who can go more, he's probably going to go a line. I think you'll see the Jets grab one of those three receivers if they're there. I think the second most likely is probably Brock Bowers. Again, another weapon for this Jets offense. I think he's a little bit more of an enigma. I think he's a little bit more of kind of your choice and your flavor of what you like in a, what you like in, you know, drafting a top 10 player. And then lastly, I think Troy Fontenelle or Olu Fashanu, you know, respective tackles from Washington and Penn State are a good shout. The Jets are set at offensive line from starters, but a lot of guys have injury history. So I know it's probably not an exact answer, but I would say right now, if I said all around the board, I would say they'd go Rome, then Bowers, then one of the tackles.
Now, Will, when you're talking about a possible trade-up, I know right now with the Jets in a similar spot as the Bears to where they have that top high pick, but then they don't have another pick until round three. So is that causing some controversy there of that possible trade-up?
Yeah, I think, look, in a perfect world, I think the Jets would love to have an additional top 100 pick. Obviously this is a pick that, in a crazy way, as much as last year was a disaster with Rodgers getting hurt, you know, four plays in and the whole nine yards, this would have been a first-round pick if Rodgers would have played last year. So, you know, who knows where the Jets would have, how it would have gone last year. I think they would have been a playoff team, obviously. But, you know, now they have a top 10 pick and they have Rodgers coming off, you know, coming off injury. So I think they'd love to trade down. I just think they're in a precarious spot where, unless it's a Cincinnati, maybe it's a Jacksonville coming up for a tackle, I mean, you know, receiver or a tackle or one of these corners. Other than maybe, you know, there's three teams after the Jets that all want quarterbacks, but how much return are the Jets really going to get, you know, moving back one or two spots? Do you get an extra four? And is that, the Jets already have two fours. Is that worth it? That's why I think, like, they're in a bit of a spot there, but you have to remember as well, this entire Jets regime, head coach, GM, coaches, et cetera, are probably all fired if the Jets don't make the playoffs. I would say they are pretty much guaranteed to be fired if they don't make the playoffs. That said, you know, if you're the Jets GM, Joe Douglas, who cares about that 2025 first-round pick, right? If you're not even going to be, you might not be working. I wrapped the credit card for somebody else. You know, if this thing doesn't work and if the Jets are really good and you hit and trade up, you know, that's a pick in the late 20s and you're not feeling too crappy about it. So I would agree, yes, but they probably love to trade down. I just don't know, you know, how much can you afford to trade down when you still do need one or two more elite guys on this roster.
Well, where are Jets fans on Aaron Rodgers? Obviously, they're hoping he's going to be healthy. Do they fully believe in him? He is getting up there in age. And also, he's so incredibly kooky, quirky. Like, how do they feel about him?
Oh, we could do a 2-hour podcast on this alone. I think part of the thing here is, you have to think about it, is all the hype from last year is almost only built up more now.
Okay.
From the aspect of, look, he played four plays. We have no idea how it would have gone. He played two preseason series. He threw an awesome touchdown to Garrett Wilson, and that's it. And then he had really good practices. So there's not much to go off of. The Jets are coming off of three straight years of Zach Wilson, Mike White, Trevor Siemian, Chris Streveler, Tim Boyle. I'm missing somebody else here. Josh Johnson. So it's like they're coming off having a starting quarterback for the last 3 years, the majority of the year. That's one of the worst NFL draft busts we've seen in the 21st century. So honestly, Aaron Rodgers being even like 50% Rodgers, and even if he had the year he had in 2022, I feel like it's probably worth it. I think people would love to, you know, the Jets are in the headlines a lot more than they have been in recent memories because of Aaron Rodgers, obviously, in New York. So I think sometimes fans are a bit frustrated with a lot of the headlines being not about football. That's for sure. And a little bit of there's a term in New York of like lol Jets, or typical Jets. And that's kind of, you know, where a lot of these stories come from. So I get that. But at the same time, I think these fans are just super excited. I think this year, GM Aaron Rodgers is kind of taking a step to the side, and it's just quarterback Aaron Rodgers and captain of the team Aaron Rodgers, not Alan Lazard, Randall Cobb type of move. The Jets have been pretty shrewd with Tyron Smith, Morgan Moses, Mike Williams, you know, just name a few. I think that's part of why there's not as much anger this year. I think during the year, there was excitement he was going to come back, and the season just went so poorly that, like I said, honestly, you know, the Jets have had one 30-touchdown passer or two 30-touchdown passes in the team history. Rodgers has had like a bunch of 45-plus touchdown years. So I think, you know, he's 40. you know, anything's better than watching Zach Wilson for 17 weeks.
You can find him on X at WillPA11. He is the host of the Turn on the Jets podcast, and Will Parkinson joining us on the All Pro Roofing Hotline. Will, I've seen several listeners of your podcast, several Jets fans on Twitter, tweet the following phrase term at you, and so I'm just going to throw it out there in the open. What is Bauer sexual, and where did that come from?
That's a great question. I've been trying to rack my brain around what that even means. There was a term coined by Ithaca legend Jay Gazin earlier last year that people who were diehard Zach Wilson fans were Zach Wilson truthers, and then you had the Zach Wilson haters. That was a fun, not so fun, maybe want to rip my hair out type of debate for the last couple years. This has now become the new Jets fan thing. It was Darnold versus Sam. Then it was Zach versus Zach himself. Now it's, Brock Bowers at 10 versus not versus O-line and, a different receiver. If you are someone that likes Brock Bowers as a prospect, which I think anybody around the NFL does like Brock Bowers that actually has watched the tape and talked to any semblance of any coach ever that existed, and either college or the pros would say Brock Bowers is a really good prospect. Whether you want to take him at 10 or not, you can just say he's a good prospect. If you say anything positively about him as a Jets fan, you are a Bauer sexual. And if you, if you think he's not good, then, you hate him and, you think the Jets suck and the whole thing. So it's a very unfortunate situation because I like to try to talk about prospects in like a realistic manner of like there's no perfect guy. And, right. Like Bowers would be really good on the Chiefs or the Lions or these teams with innovative offensive coordinators. The Jets have Nate Hackett, and you're hoping Aaron Rodgers brings out the best in a guy if they draft Bowers. So I guess I'm a Bauer sexual because I wouldn't hate the pick at 10, but I still would love to know if that ends up in the dictionary one day.
Well, me and I have met Brock Bowers, and I'm going to say that if he gets wind of this, he does not want to play there. He will not like this attached to him.
He panicked when I just did like a question of the day. It was like, get rid of one of these three things, like steak, chicken, or pork. And he, panicked for a solid 3 minutes how he would answer.
God. That's too much.
Right. A great, great football player. There's no question. Great guy, too. But I think he would panic if he knew that.
Saying he's the anti-Javon Kinlaw with the media.
Yeah.
If anyone doesn't know what I'm talking about, just Google it. I'm not going to run radio. I'm not going to go into that. But, so the anti-Javon Kinlaw, anti-Aaron Rodgers, basically.
One more for you, Will, before we let you go. I am curious the state of the offensive line, just because Morgan Moses, Tyron Smith, one-year deals, older, up there in age. That's where I can't help but question, and I understand that, Joe Douglas and company could be gone if they don't win this year, and so you push all those chips to the middle of the table. You try to give Aaron Rodgers everything he possibly could ask for in the passing game. But doesn't that also include fortifying an offensive line that struggled so mightily last year in terms of future offensive linemen too?
Yeah, 100%. I think that this is kind of, we mentioned Bowers in the debate there. This is one thing where, it's different and it's difficult to kind of talk through because last year the Jets, right, were in a similar mold. I think everyone thought they were going to try to win a Super Bowl. Obviously, Rodgers gets hurt in the whole nine yards and they had other issues. That said, they ended up drafting Will McDonald last year in the first round, and Will McDonald played 17% of snaps. I mean, they end up losing Bryce Huff to free agency because of it. And there was a lot of frustration. Hey, we took a first round pick that barely played last year, and he's not even really guaranteed to play much this year either after getting a sound Reddick. So I think there's a little bit of PTSD there. Hey, would this guy even start day one? Can we afford to have a guy who's a rotational piece as a rookie? But then you just have to look at, hey, Tyron Smith misses time every year. Morgan Moses, he's been an Ironman in the NFL, finally missed time for the first time last year. And, John Simpson's a guy who, I like the value of the signing, to your point, a year ago with the Raiders was kind of trending towards an XFL player and is now revitalized and et cetera. Joe Thibodeau and Elijah Vera Tucker, again, really nice prospect, young player. So to your point, I think that's where the reason where offensive line makes too much sense to Troy Fontenot out of Washington if you're the Jets. Maybe it's a slight reach. Maybe he's the 18th best prospect and he should really go kind of where the Jags are picking and that term, maybe it's Cincinnati. He's a guy that could probably beat out John Simpson week one. And you're saying, wow, the Jets offensive line's got three awesome studs under the age of 25 and they've got these two veteran tackles and Fontenelle will take over tackle next year. That's the reasoning for drafting offensive line. So, you know, you could kind of go back and forth of, hey, does the quarterback help mitigate pass rush, or do they need a better offensive line? Whatever is it? All I know is Aaron Rodgers, while he still has every bit of juice on his arm, the one thing I think we haven't talked a lot about, especially in New York, has not been talked about enough, not just that he had the Achilles injury, but he still moves well, right? He's not, you know, Brady towards the end, or Mac Jones, no offense to, you know, the Jags need backup starting or backup quarterback, but you know, he's not more of like what Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow and these guys were earlier in his career, where he can move around and his mobility to create things outside the pocket. That's not quite as much as what he is anymore. So maybe, you know, drafting offensive line is the prudent strategy, and that's what you go with and say, hey, listen, you know, figure out how to make Alan Lazard back to a 60-catch, 600-yard receiver instead of a guy who caught 21 balls for 200 yards last year. Like, hey, you're going to deal with Lazard, and we'll get you an extra tackle. So I think that's the reasoning and argument to go draft offensive line at 10.
Well, I do want to ask you real quick before we let you go. Generally, what are the vibes around the AFC East? The Bills kind of cleaned house almost offensively. Obviously, still have Josh Allen, but losing Stephon Diggs and a couple offensive linemen and Gabe Davis to here in Jacksonville. But the Patriots, a TBD at quarterback, a new coach. The Dolphins seem like it may be the biggest competition there right now.
Yeah, I'd honestly 100% agree. I think anytime you have Josh Allen, you're a threat. And, you know, the Bills have obviously won the AFC East, you know, a lot in recent memory. I'm sure, you know, as Jets and Dolphins fans, having to go from Brady to right to Josh Allen, obviously very different types of players. You know, just your own vision. I think the Bills are still the favorite just in terms of name, quarterback, and things like that. But Miami's got a really good roster, but Miami's roster is quite top-heavy. They lost a lot of really valuable guys on defense. You know, Tyreek Hill, as amazing as he is, and I'm not slandering him in any way, has certainly started to get more and more banged up. I don't know if you guys have seen the same thing, but it feels like every week now it's an ankle and a hip and ribs. Jalen Waddle seems to be the same way. Raheem Mostert similar, Devon Achane similar, and Tua, obviously, as we know. If you get 17 games out of Tua again, I mean, I don't know anything about injuries, because that'd be quite impressive to get healthier as you get older. So I think the Jets have the best roster on paper in the AFC East, and I think they should expect to win the East. It's so much projection of what's Rodgers look like? What is Tyron Smith going to be? What is Mike Williams going to come back and be? Who are they going to draft at 10? All these different things. I think the Patriots are a clear fourth, and I think the Bills are probably of the weakest of the three rosters with the best quarterback. So it should be a really fun battle. I think if all three teams were in the playoffs next year, I don't think anyone would be surprised. If two of them end up injuries and not performing to expectation, I don't think anyone would be surprised either.
Will, as we get ready to say goodbye on the All Pro Roofing Hotline, let the folks at home know where they can find you. And I know you also were a part of a draft guide, I believe, with Badlands, if you're able to plug that too.
Yeah, no, for sure. Will PA on 11 on Twitter, Instagram, all those different things. Turn on the Jets podcast or your podcast. Turn on the TOJ Talks on Saturdays on Badlands. It's myself, Connor Rogers, Joe Caparoso, and a bunch of other folks at the network. Just, you know, put out a 150 prospect, even if it's 300 prospects by next week. Draft guide in depth, even if you're not a Jets fan, it's a great way to kind of get involved there. And then have another show that actually is launching with Mike Giardi, you know, up in Boston, formerly NFL Network, that'll be covering all 32 teams in the league. So I'll be everywhere. If you want to hear my voice at all, you know, there's plenty of places to be able to find me.
How fitting. We had Mike on to make the third pick in our countdown to 17, and now you make the 10th for the Jets. So it all comes full circle.
I know I did a better job than Mike. It's okay. He knows.
We'll let him know, too.
He said good things about Mac Jones, though, Will.
Oh, boy. Yikes. I'm going to have to bring that one up on the next episode.
Hey, as long as we get some love, nothing wrong with that. It all comes full circle.
Yeah, exactly. Free PR is not bad.
Exactly. Will Parkinson, again, of the Turn on the Jets podcast. You can find him at WillPA11 on X. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me, guys.
And there he goes, one of the rising stars in the New York sports scene. Make sure you guys follow him. Ton of great draft content as well, like he said, Jets and beyond.
So Trevor Lawrence, Jaguars quarterback, is meeting with the media as we speak. And two giant takeaways for me that have come out as everyone's covering that everyone that covers the Jaguars is tweeting about it. Of course, the Jaguars beat reporters that are there. He did not feel healthy, fully healthy until March. The Jaguars' last regular season game, and of course no postseason this past season, was January 7th against the Titans. So that's basically 2 months worth for him to feel fully healthy. Mm-hmm. That goes to show you just how ravaged his body was last season. The other thing that he said, he doesn't know if Doug Peterson or Press Taylor will call the plays this upcoming season.
That is the juicy one.
All right. Well, look at that.
I will say, too, then, like, there was a point at the end of last season where I was like, if you do not feel like you can play to, like, your highest ability, then don't play. And he kept forcing it. Like, I get it, Trevor. You're a competitor and you want to be out there. But ultimately, it hurt the team. And, like, you've got to make that decision of let my body rest. Because imagine if he would have – maybe it would have been able to heal or not get re-injured or certain things wouldn't have happened if he would have just sat a game.
But I think that's exactly why we just talked about Mac Jones. I think that's exactly why Mac Jones is here. Because I think – Trevor and probably nothing against CJ Beathard, but I think Trevor and the offensive coaches.
He didn't play terrible when he was in.
He didn't play terrible, but he played against such a bad team in the Panthers. I think they looked around and thought that Trevor, even at 70%, and I'm just throwing a percentage out there, but Trevor, even under 100% healthy, was better than the next option. And that's, to me, why I think they traded for Mac Jones, because if he does have the same, not same injury, but if he goes through a similar thing this year and he is injured, yes, we need you to sit because we need you to fully get healthy before the next game or for the next few games. And you felt more comfortable, or they feel more comfortable with a guy like Mac Jones, I believe, than a guy like CJ Beathard. All right, when we come back, we will get into our Heels highlights. We've got some special Saturday Night Live clips for you. And, of course, we still have the NBA to discuss. You're listening to Helmets and Heels on 1010XL 92.5 FM.
This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.
Light up your lunch with Helmets and Heels.
Presented by First Coast Lighting and Fans.
On 1010XL.
Every Tuesday on Helmets and Heels, we give you our Heels highlights. And they sound this week like this.
We on? One, two, three, go!
Nico Horner drives in the game-winning run as Cubs beat Diamondbacks in extras.
Nico, let's first start when you were able to drive in the winning run there. You got to a fastball that was about up here.
Line drive, base hit, right field. Grichik up with it. Only one will score. And it is 3-2. The Cubs with the lead as Nico comes through.
What's the key to getting to a pitch like that?
Yeah, probably not what we're going up there looking for, but definitely we'll take that result.
Scotty Scheffler's eagle at 13 on Saturday gives him the tie for the lead at 6-under at the Masters.
Scotty Scheffler can make some noise here. This is for eagle. You want noise? You got it! Triple fist pump.
Love it.
Max Holloway knocks out Justin Gaethje with 1 second left for the BMF title at UFC 300.
Holy smoke. And this was a fight where everybody thought that Max was going to be outgunned.
He was not outgunned.
Oh my God.
All night long.
Look at this right hand that ends it. Right here.
Wow.
And what a result. What a result. Unbelievable.
And on the
with
biggest night
second
of the year.
Look at the clock. 3. I mean, these guys are winging. 2. Boom!
I figured I'd throw you guys for a bit of a loop there.
That was.
I was like, they're fully expecting me to pick baseball or golf or the WNBA draft. Don't worry, we'll hear from that in a little bit. But no, I actually made it through an entire UFC fight card, which, of course, Kevin is a huge UFC nut. And so 6 o'clock, UFC 300 kicked off with the prelims. And usually by about midnight, I'm falling asleep on the couch. But shout out to Max Blessed Holloway and company, because number one, an exciting finish for the BMF title. But also in sports, I don't think outside of a buzzer beater, we have a situation where you have a knockout with 0.01 seconds left on the clock like we did in the UFC out in Vegas on Saturday. And so I think as a pure sports fan, not to mention there's 10 seconds left, he's already going to win the fight by decision. And he pulls Justin Gaethje over and he says, like, let's just duke it out for 10 seconds. And he knocks him out. So
is that where the new Joe Rogan?
Yes.
Screenshot
yes. Sage Steele. Yes. That's Joe Rogan, not Dana White. The new meme that presumably people will be using. That is indeed where it came from, because it was wild, because like you're sitting there on the couch and you're like, OK, like they're going to, like, you know, have a big finish. But he didn't expect to knock him out. I mean, defending champion, you know, he had the belt. And then, that was that. And so it was very epic. It was a very epic third to last. So that's the featured bout. See, I'm learning. A very epic featured bout. And the women's co-main event went a little bit longer than I would have liked. I thought I was fading fast. That was also around the same time Caitlin Clark appeared on SNL. And so I was, like, debating, like, let me pull up on a second screen right now. And then, of course, the main event ended in a knockout real quick. So
the featured one is usually a championship bout, right?
The featured is the third from the top. So it's feature. I'm learning so much, by the way. So there's the curtain jerker, Lauren.
Oh.
That's the first match of the card, of the prelims. And then we get to the main card, which is the top five fights of the night, which is the headliner. And that's where it's usually pay-per-view. And that's where you have the featured bout is the third to the top, the co-main event, and then the main event.
So much that I
listen. The UFC MMA watched. Analyst Bo Valentine has said he will pop on whenever we need to break down MMA for us this summer. Maybe in the dog days of the summer.
Appreciate that. All right, let's move along. The Cubs win, so we had some baseball. When you have your favorite players on here, Taylor, it's been Christopher Morel. Mm-hmm. Now it's Nico Horner, and I feel like you have another favorite Cub.
Those are like my two top favorites.
Okay,
I like Dansby Swanson a lot. He's probably like my next. I love everybody. I was just about to go through the whole lineup. And I was like, let me just stop. Christopher Morel and Nico Horner are my two favorite Cubs right now. The one guy that I had a couple weeks ago, Michael Bush, he is new. We just got him. He was one of the Dodgers prospects. We got him in a trade last week. He just hit his homer in a fifth straight game. He's been playing really, really good baseball. They've been kind of mixing him around in the field, but a lot of first base there. So we'll see what happens when Pete Crow Armstrong gets called up and then Belly goes back to first. I'm not quite sure what they'll do because they're going to want him in the lineup. He's been batting really well. But he's new. So he's not like a favorite yet, but he's been really fun to watch because he's all over the place and he can just crush the ball, which has been fun. But yeah, this play was funny because it ended up being it was top of the 11th, ended up being what won the game. But Nico Horner swung at a ball that was literally like above his head. And I'm like, what is he swinging at? But made contact, single, drives in a run, and even like that's why I kind of combined the clip because she was like, what, you know, what was going through your mind when you hit something? He's like, you don't hit that, you're like, you normally don't do that, right? But it worked out, so it's fine. But if you see it, I sent it to my brother who plays baseball. I was like, look at him swing, who's also a pitcher, and I was like, look at him hitting this ball above his head. And my brother was like, yeah, don't do that.
I definitely teach you not to do things like that. And I picked Scottie Scheffler with the Eagle because I just think Scottie Scheffler deserves even more praise with just how he's handled all the success and everything like that. But yeah, the Eagle on 13 on Saturday, and hearing Jim Nantz, who we didn't get to hear during the Final Four, certainly Ian Eagle did a great job and had some really fantastic memories, sound clips that we'll remember. But I love listening to Jim Nantz, and so I had that. Brian reminded me that I could have also picked Jack Caglione's home run on Saturday that I got
another
to see in
one.
Person. Another home run is 19th since he hit his 20th on Sunday. But I've played Cags, I think, the last 2 weeks, so yeah. I decided I'll go with Scottie Scheffler.
I feel like from, like, February to June, we could do a Cags every week highlight for a home run.
I certainly hope so, at least.
I guess depending.
Could we get a pitching highlight, though? That's what Florida fans really need.
Yeah, he's really only had one bad game. Mm-hmm. Other than that, he hasn't pitched perfectly by any means, but he's only really had one bad game so far this season. All right, you mentioned SNL, Mia, and Taylor, I know you've loved SNL for a long time and the skits and everything like that. So you put together a compilation. RJ did a great job, RJ.
I sent him a few. We kind of discussed in our group chat a few that we remember. And then so I also just, in an article, people kind of ranked certain ones that they also thought was funny. And I was reading it in the office and I was like, oh, I forgot about this one. And Mia was like, oh, yeah, that was a good one. So I threw, I gave some to RJ to put together a little reel of some of the better sports-related SNL skits.
This year, Caitlin Clark broke the record for three-pointers in a single season, and I have three-pointers for Michael Che. 1B, 2 funnier, 3 double.
Wow. Thanks for doing that, Michael.
Yeah, no problem, and good luck in the WNBA. I hope you have a great first season.
Thanks. I'm sure it will be a big first step for me. But it's just one step for the WNBA, thanks to all the great players. And Michael, since you're such a big fan, I brought you a souvenir. It's an apron signed by me.
Seriously, I'm honored that SNL asked me to host. I was nervous about doing a monologue, but then I remembered I'm pretty good with words. I'm pretty good with words. Like during games, I do these super eloquent pump-up speeches for my teammates. Please watch.
More.
And sometimes I even do it in my Pat Mahomes voice.
More.
As you know, basketball is a pleasant diversion, but let us get back to a more serious topic.
The Bears.
Now, when we were last privileged to observe the Bears, they were playing the Giants in a postseason. Final score of that game was 31-3, and I shan't say who won. Pat, what happened?
I think it's pretty obvious. Coach Dicka had his mind on more important things.
There was a war on, my friend.
That's right, our boys were overseas.
Did you guys order the nachos or the beers?
The Bears.
Hi, I'm Eli Manning, and I'm a proud ambassador to the Little Brothers program.
So, what does your brother do to you?
He breaks my toys and doesn't let me play with my video games.
Let's find a creative solution to fix that.
Are you Eli Manning?
Nope. I'm your worst nightmare.
All right, Sunday night kicking back. Everybody looking at the quarterback. San Francisco is the place to be. Cause it's Sunday night football on NBC.
Okay, we're coming to you live from beautiful Candlestick Park.
The Eagles won the coin toss. It's time for kickoff here on Sunday Night Football.
What's up, girls? Who wants to hit a granny slam?
Don't worry, Grandma. Grandpa Rossi will take good care of you.
It's your lucky night. We're about to pull a triple header.
Ooh!
Well done, RJ. A whole little trip down memory lane there. The Eli Manning was the one that I completely forgot.
Me too.
The times that Eli and Peyton have appeared on SNL.
They're fantastic.
No, I mean, and you know, bias aside, I thought Caitlin Clark did a pretty good job. If anything, I think they told her to go out there and they were like, you need to be assertive. Because it came off as like you need to like be the stand up for women's sports and mean to him. Because I think you even saw it last night in the WNBA draft coverage. Like, she is at her best. Not to say that O'Brien is strong in her, but it is. When she's on the desk with Ryan Ruocco and Rebecca Lobo and Andrea Carter, and she's like, I mean, it's the Midwest. I'm back in the Midwest. Like, that's much more, I think, her style as opposed to this, like, tight, buttoned up, like, you know, I'm going to list off all the WNBA greats. But, hey, it was good and was, you know, very, very newsworthy. Credit to SNL for reaching out to a sport that I couldn't tell you if any WNBA players have ever appeared on.
Yeah, I'm not sure either.
I know Ronda Rousey was on SNL, and she was one of the first female athletes to host, so I don't think there have been very many. All right, as promised, we will talk NBA when we return right here on Helmets and Heels on 1010XL on 92.5 FM.
This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers. Helmets and Heels is brightened by
First Coast Lighting and Fans
on 1010XL.
One segment to go here on Helmets and Heels on 92.5 FM. Before we turn it over to the boys from XL Primetime, Mia O'Brien, Taylor Dahl, RJ Saunders, I am Lauren Brooks. All right, a couple things to get to before we get out of here, and that would be the NBA play-in tournament that starts tonight. All right, RJ, Lakers or Pelicans? If I'm a betting woman tonight, who you got?
If I'm betting?
Yep.
Oh, God. I don't know, because there's so much going on with the Lakers. I'm going to call it. I think they tank this one out. They lose intentionally.
Really?
And they'll play one more game for the 8 spot so that they can face OKC in the first round. So I have New Orleans winning this one.
And Mia, you probably have the odds. I'm really just asking him more or less to pick straight up. And then the late night game tonight, Warriors-Kings, who you got?
I am going to take... Oh, my goodness. I'll take Golden State in this one.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of our counterparts out in the Bay Area this morning, and the Warriors have definitely, RJ, been a talking point, to say the least, even overshadowing the Brandon Ayuk, did he request a trade, did he not request a trade storyline out there, because they're not the Warriors of old, and are they old, I think, is the biggest question if you are looking to either get in on the action with this game or simply watch it tonight.
Well, Steph Curry's crying this season, so I feel like they're feeling old. RJ, of the play-in teams, which Kings, Warriors, Pelicans, Lakers, Bulls, Hawks, 76ers, Heat. Which one of those, if they did, is most likely to make a run, do you feel?
Well, they've been making a run the last few years. That team down there in South Florida. And Jimmy Butler's already calling his shot, saying that nobody wants to face us in a seven-game series to begin with. So, I feel like that's the team that could make the run. Philly is interesting,
right?
To me, because Embiid is back, and if Embiid and Maxey are able to rekindle some of that fire they had early on in the regular season, let's just say they come in as the eighth seed and they're playing Boston in the first round, could be scary there. I don't know if I just give Boston the runaway with that. So, yeah, the two teams in the West, you know, I think the Lakers would probably say we'll take our chances against Oklahoma City and we'll use our veteran know-how to win a seven-game series there. But a team that could make a legitimate run is a team that's been doing it for the last few years in Miami.
It's because they have culture. We talk so much the Jags need a culture. What is their culture? We know what Miami's culture is. There's no question about that on the basketball hardwood. By the way, lines from my bookie for tonight's two play-in games in the Western Conference. The New Orleans Pelicans, 1.5-point favorites over the Los Angeles Lakers, and the Golden State Warriors, indeed, are 2-point favorites over the Sacramento Kings, who, RJ, at last look for those casual NBA fans who may have not been following as diligently since the postseason a year ago. The Kings, I don't want to say they were the darling, the Jaguars, if you may, of the NBA postseason last year, but they didn't have to play in the play-in tournament last year, correct me if I'm wrong, and I think the expectation was that they'd pick up right where they left off and contend for a 1, 2, or 3 seed and not be finding themselves here just trying to make the dance.
In the words of Shaquille O'Neal, Sacramento will never be the capital of California. Los Angeles will be the capital of California. Can you dig it? This was a team I thought, you know, Mike Brown had figured out the secret sauce. I mean, you know, he's kind of been around the league since he and LeBron parted ways early on in LeBron James's career, and he found himself as an assistant coach on Steve Kerr's staff. Had this resurgence year one, coaching-wise, with a young Sacramento team, Sabonis and Fox, I really like as a 1-2 punch. I just think probably the expectations for them making that next step probably just a little bit too early. But I do think this is a team that's going to be scrappy. I'm not just going to give this game to Golden State. I do feel that Sacramento is going to look across the way and see a Golden State team and say this team is beatable. And that if we are to face, whether that be, well, if we win our first round series, if we face OKC, defeat the Lakers and the second play-in game and face OKC in the first round, we have a chance to beat OKC. So although they've had a step back this year, I do think that they're a team that is still confident in their abilities.
There you have it. I will be watching tonight, at least the first game. The second game doesn't tip off till 10 o'clock. That
West
is very
Coast,
late
baby.
For the East Coast people. But, yeah, it's for the West Coast fans. The Jumbo Shrimp currently lead the Norfolk Tides 3-0. And there was a miraculous play that may end up being on SportsCenter by one of the infielders for the Jumbo Shrimp. So be paying attention to that. Actually, outfielder, he came up that far to save a grand slam. Well, it wouldn't have been a grand slam, but the bases were loaded for Norfolk. But it could, if it had dropped, they certainly would have scored runs. So 3-0 for the Jumbo Shrimp. And the last thing I'll leave you with today, ladies and RJ, Anton Harrison, Jaguars right tackle, tweeted this out this morning. I legit get mad when I see people put ketchup and or hot sauce in eggs.
I think we need to have Anton, like, we need to get a video series.
His food
or radio, a
yes,
radio
I
segment.
Them. I
like, even if we have him call in, like, once a week, and it's just, like, he's on for 5 minutes, and he just, like,
I love it.
Takes callers upset about his food
I'm with
takes.
Him. I'm with
oh,
him
I love
on that
eggs
first
and hot
half.
Sauce. Come on,
yeah,
man.
I like, I don't like eggs with ketchup. I love eggs with hot sauce.
He also said he put sugar in his grits, and that was just weird to me.
That's super weird to me. That's butter and salt. Thing. Those are the two things that go in grits. All right, that's a wrap for us. Thank you to our guests from today. These heels are made for talking. We'll talk to you tomorrow. For Mia O'Brien, for Taylor Dahl, for RJ Saunders, I'm Lauren Brooks. Don't go anywhere. XL Primetime comes up next.
These boots are gonna walk all over you. Yeah. You keep lying when you ought to be truthing. And you keep losing when you ought to not bet.
changing.
Now what's right? This hour of Helmets and Heels is brought to you by First Coast Honda Dealers.